Programming at WEF is sponsored in part by The Upper Bout, a retail music store with a different kind of attitude. The Upper Bout has an extensive selection of guitars, amps, accessories, and more. They offer lessons as well as sponsor in-store concerts. All the information as well as online shopping is available at www.theupperbout.com. The Upper Bout is located at 723 South Neal Street in Champaign and is open Monday to Saturday, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
It is noon, and this is The World We Live In on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming online at weft.org. And if you don't know, this is a show where I generally talk about things about politics or things dealing with politics. And in case if you didn't know, yesterday was the 19th anniversary of the Columbine High School shooting that happened in 1999. And so the March for Our Lives, for those who don't know, has been a march that started with the shooting that happened in Douglasman Hyman School in Parkland, Florida. And that's kind of created this demand and social march for gun regulation and one of the March for Our Lives in the Champaign Urbana happened and held a walkout yesterday in the in schools like Centennial High School, Urbana High School, and they held a walkout at 10 a.m. yesterday morning, and this is some of their chants and demonstrations.
Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
We got the power. Student power.
And I talked to a few of the students that were behind this event. One of them was Isaac. If I'm pronouncing his name, hopefully I'm pronouncing his name. Isaac Gurth. He's a sophomore in Urbana High School, and he was one of the organizers for the walkout that happened yesterday.
Basically, two months ago, we were having a meeting talking about the March for, or no, it wasn't even about the March for Lives. It was about the walkout on March 14th. So we were talking about that, then we were throwing out tons of ideas, see you March for Our Lives, think something on April 20th, and we did the March for Our Lives, we had lots of energy, we had a lot of funding from that, and we were like, we can make something really cool to really bring to attention not just the school shootings, but also the intersectionality of gun violence, because that's something people don't often hear about, people don't often think about it. And so we organized this event, and our main goal is just to educate people and get and introduce, because a lot of Urbana and Champaign, a lot of it is very privileged community, especially schools like uni, so we wanted to really tell people about their privilege within the gun violence debate.
And so today it started with a walkout, and can you kind of talk about that? You like walked out, you marched, and then...
Yeah. So I was at Urbana. We walked out at 10. We were all carrying signs. We did tons of chants, like 1, 2, 3, 4, Congress, legislate, stuff like that. It was really great. Students have the power. And we walked all the way over here, about half a mile. There was 70 Urbana kids, and it was really empowering. I lost my voice a little bit, but that's okay.
I also talked to Zandon Duncan, who is a senior at Central High School, and he talked about, again, about the event and kind of what they hope to achieve with it.
So this this walkout is a part of the national April 20th walkout that the Parkland students are organizing. And unfortunately, we couldn't get everyone here, so we were originally going to have it at Cranert, but we decided to move it here because scheduling issues at Cranert. But yeah, what gave us the idea was just, like, the Parkland students, like, wanting to do something, and we decided a teach-in would be really good, and we spent about a month preparing for this, getting speakers and stuff, but the real hard work came down about this week. We kind of organized really, really quickly and kind of explosively, I guess.
And have you gotten any kind of challenges for people saying, you know, if you don't...
Okay, so the only challenge that we've gotten is Central and Centennial. They couldn't participate because the walkout would have interfered with social probation, and you would have gotten social probation. And that would have led to you not being able to go to prom. So they were going to punish you by not letting you go to prom for simply using your voice. And that's kind of the main challenge. Sorry about that. That's kind of the main challenge we've had. That's why there's not as big a turnout. If that wasn't an issue and we got the same punishment as Urbana and Uni, a lot more people would have come, I felt. And we would have had, like, buses and transportation able to take people from Central and Centennial. So that was kind of the main challenge, and we had to just kind of cut our losses and say, well, we can't do it, so there's a teach-in at Central. I don't know about Centennial, there might be one. But yeah, that's kind of the main challenge we've had. It's a lot more challenging than our last action.
Do you know how many people have come out to this?
So we have about 70 from Urbana, 150 from Uni, and then probably 10 from Centennial and one from Central. Or two, I guess, me and him. Yeah. So very, very low numbers from Central and Centennial.
Okay, and Moms Demand Action, do they help organize? Or?
Valerie O'Brien did help organize it. She's the student liaison, and she's, like, basically our mom. She's great. She's been a big help for both events. And yeah, she's been the Moms Demand Action liaison for students.
Julian Hsu, who is a sophomore and at Sentinel High School, also, again, one of the organizers and members of this March for Our Lives in Champaign-Urbana, talked about what were writing postcards to the local officials, and she kind of explains what they want them to want out of in terms of gun reform and gun legislation.
So the students are writing about to their representatives or people in public office about issues, and what are some of the issues you want them to bring attention to?
Yeah, so the governor just vetoed the dealer licensing bill, and that the bill would require all gun dealers to have licenses. So we wanted them to write to the governor and have them override the veto. And also writing to national representatives about the concealed carry reciprocity bill, which that bill would give people in other states with concealed carry licenses to bring their concealed carry weapons into other states. So we want that repealed. And also the Dickey Amendment, we want repealed because it prevents CDC researching for gun violence and other gun-related statistics.
Okay.
Yep.
Was there also the Brady Bill? Was that something?
Did not mention that, but that's another thing that people could write about if they want to go home and write about that.
Okay. And you also said personal stories that maybe they have about, you know, like, talk about, like, has anyone come to you about, or any?
Yeah, so in my school, I know several people, and it's definitely more than just the people that I've talked to, but several people have talked about gun violence in their neighborhoods. And this is an everyday thing, especially in the north of Champaign. So they have stories about their cousins, their brothers, their fathers, and their significant others getting shot in neighborhoods, people that they've lost, people who are in jail because of gun violence. So these are everyday things for many people, and something that a lot of the people in there don't realize because of their position and privilege or because they don't go to school with these people is that people are constantly thinking about this. This isn't a new thing, you know, gun control. It's not new. But now that it is getting all of this attention, I think it's great that people are finally realizing that this happens in their own community.
Aaron Ammons, who's city councilman at Urbana, talked about gave a speech to the students to talk about the importance of participating in a democracy and having to participate in a pushing themselves and educating themselves on history to kind of learn how this democracy works and how progressive change works. So this is Aaron Ammons.
Right, good morning, everybody. We're going to try to give ourselves a huge round of applause for yourself. Come on, everybody. Right. My name is Aaron Ammons. I am an alderman in the city of Urbana. I am running for Champaign County Clerk. And I indeed would be the first African American to ever hold this office. But that is not the primary reason why I'm running for this office. I'm running for the office because I believe in democracy. I believe that any elected official has to see their position as way more than just a job. We have to be an ambassador for democracy, for participatory democracy, making sure young people are involved, making sure people of color are involved, making sure everyone in our society who has been otherized, who have been pushed to the margins of our society, are invited and are welcomed into the space. And young people, you all have suffered some of the most tremendous ostracizing through the history of our society by saying you're just young, you should do what we tell you to do, that your opinions don't matter, or that your voice isn't loud enough. And I want to say to you that I'm deeply moved by all of you for having the courage, the insight, and the discipline to organize these types of events and to walk out and say we're taking a stance, but to come in here and say we want to learn. I want you all to fully understand that when you think about the Dr. Kings or the great movement leaders that you've been taught about and you've heard about in school, they were avid, voracious readers. They were educators. They educated themselves. They didn't wait for the academic training to give them what they needed to be able to sustain a movement. It was self-discipline, it was learning to organize, it was learning history well beyond what you're going to get in your classrooms. So I deeply, deeply, deeply thank you, and I'm very encouraged to see you organize your teaching, but I also want you to understand how important it is for you to push yourselves further, to go and learn more about what's been happening in the history of our society, above and beyond what you get at school. Okay? All right? All right? There's a lot of stuff I could speak about. One of the things that I'm learning in a book here is called Give Us the Ballot. Okay? Now, a part of this gun violence movement, and it has to do some things to make it go from moment to movement. It has to be sustained. And that means that the things that you all are doing now have to be sustained over a long period of time in order for it to be a movement. Otherwise, it will be characterized in history as a moment. Right? And what you're trying to do is to affect policy changes, and it takes time to do that. I'm involved in politics. It does not change overnight. It takes you all, it takes the people who are deeply concerned to change the social and political will to make the legislators and make the elected officials bring about the changes that you, the people, want to see happen. You all understand that? All right. Be committed. Be committed. In this very place, myself, Brian Dolliner, and various other people who may be walking around this place, we met in this building, in that little library area right there, for 10 and a half years, every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. Every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m., unless we were organizing an event. Whether it was 3 people or 30 people, we met there for 10 and a half years to bring about change in this community, to hopefully see something like this. Y'all give it up for BDO. The organization was called Champaign Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice. None of us got paid. We did it because we cared, because we cared about each other and the community in which we live in now. So various different walks of life, all different forms of ideology, religion, sexual orientation, economic status, we met together over here to address the issues in our community. And our dream was to see something like this one day. So as Dr. King had a dream, this was our dream to see something like this take place. But we want to see it continue to move forward. Okay? Now, a part of this gun violence movement, from what I have seen, is that there's a very important electoral politics, meaning elections, that's a part of this, because you want to elect people who are going to make decisions and the right policies that support you and that keep you safe. Is that correct? All right. So those policies are made at various levels. They're made at the federal level, at the congressional level, and they're made at the state level also. So there are various, and at the local level, you can do various different things to bring about. I think there was a ban on assault weapons in one of the smaller communities at the municipal level. That was something that took place. You have to go and lobby and talk to your elected officials, those that represent you. And even though you may not be old enough to vote yet, they still represent you. And you can organize. If a group like this showed up at the Banner City Council saying we wanted A, B, and C, soon thereafter, you would see A, B, and C. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. Your energy, your involvement around the issue tells the people who represent you, this is what the people want. Our job is to represent the will of the people, not ourselves. So when you bring an overwhelming presence and an overwhelming push to a particular issue, it is our job. We are duty bound to follow that and to follow through on what your desires are. But you have to be organized. You have to advocate. You cannot just think you can whisper it in my ear that I'm going to go magically go and make it happen. So, Voting Rights Act. This is something that was extremely, extremely important. A lot of people didn't recognize this. In the election in 2016 for president, it was the first time in 50 years since the passing of the Voting Rights Act in 1965 that there was a presidential election that did not have Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act protected against discriminatory acts or various different things that were done by particular states to keep African Americans in particular from voting. So whether that's a poll tax or a literacy tax or voter ID laws or closing polling locations on campus, all of these types of things were seen and deemed as voter suppression. Okay? So in a democracy, we want everyone to vote. You can't claim to have a democracy when you disenfranchise citizens. In a democracy, every eligible voter is supposed to participate, or you want to encourage them to participate. When you say African Americans can't vote, when you say women can't vote, when you say people with felony convictions can't vote, that is not a democracy. I don't even know what you call it, but it ain't a democracy. Okay. All right. Form a reading group around this book. It's called Give Us the Ballot by a gentleman named Ari Berman. He does a historical analysis of the Voting Rights Act and how many detrimental policies were blocked by the Voting Rights Act. And as I told you, 2016 was the first presidential election since 1965 that didn't have Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And what did you get? You notice I didn't say who, I said what did you get? Right?
A cheetah.
So you have to understand the impact. There are places like Wisconsin where 46,000 people were disenfranchised based upon voter ID laws. And President Trump won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes. So when they're saying to me, Aaron, why are you so adamant about speaking out against this cross-check program that Chris Kobach uses to disenfranchise people of color and to make your voter data information unsafe? Why am I speaking out about that if it doesn't affect people in Champaign County? Because if I principally believe in democracy, then I cannot say that I'm a a citizen of this nation and believe principally in democracy and say I'm fine with somebody else being disenfranchised over there as long as it doesn't happen here. See, that's not principle, because an injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, right? That is the principle concept. So I'm diametrically and vehemently opposed to this cross-check program, which just happened to pass the General Assembly yesterday, 59-43, or 59-50, I think it was, something like that. And it passed, so now it will be going to the governor's desk for him to sign it. Well, he probably ain't gonna sign it, but anyway, it passed, right? But this is important for me and for you all to understand that if you're gonna fight for something principally, you're not fighting for it just in your area. You wanna see this nationwide. You wanna see this take place across the country. So I'm gonna wrap this up by saying this. In this book, I learned something new about the Voting Rights Act. A lot of people and a lot of our scholars and a lot of the teachers teach us that this was just about African Americans getting the right to vote. That's not true. The Voting Rights Act also opened the door for many people of color to have access to the voting booth. But one of the things that happened in 1969 in the election, or 1968, and then when President Nixon came in, Ted Kennedy proposed a change to the Voting Rights Act. He proposed that the age to vote was lowered from 21 to 18 in the Voting Rights Act. That was for all people. It wasn't just for African Americans, right? So I'll stop short of saying what you ought to do. I want you to think about the things you ought to do. What age do you have to be when you get your driver's license?
16.
What age do you have to be to really get your own job, not a work permit?
16.
Okay. So I'm going to leave that right there and let you all
Kristen Bell of the ACLU also spoke, and she commended the students for demonstrating, and she talked to students about how schools, the rules high schools make, and the high school, the limitations for students on free speech. And this is Kristen Bell of the ACLU.
Is Kirsten Bell, who is a member of the local American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU, and she's a professor of creative writing at the University of Illinois.
Hello, everybody. I hope you're having a great day. You look like you're having an awesome day. The Champaign County American Civil Liberties Union wants to salute all you high school students for your leadership, for your courage, and for getting out there and getting involved. Thank you. I don't know how much you know about the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. I've been working as an activist with the ACLU since 2000, and before that I worked with a number of other local groups, but I've decided to focus my activism on the ACLU because the ACLU has the back of every other group out there. So no matter what your issue-oriented group is advocating for, protesting against, working to enact, the ACLU ensures that you have the right to do that. The ACLU is often called the people's law firm. And when the government tries to limit our rights, the ACLU says, we'll see you in court. We were the ones who sued to end the immigration ban, and we were the ones that are helping one of the groups. There were many groups working together, but working to help immigrants at airports. If you know the story of Loving, that was an ACLU suit that ended interracial marriage. It was an ACLU suit that ended Japanese internment during World War II. So many, many, many of the important civil rights moments, turning points in American history, and I'm sure you've studied, were pushed over that edge and brought about by ACLU lawsuits. So I'm very proud to be president of the Champaign County chapter and to be an activist with the ACLU of Illinois. I just want to talk to you a little bit about your rights as high school students. And I have some handouts. I don't have enough, so you'll have to share and be buddies. But I do have a few, and it's all on the ACLU of Illinois website, so I urge you to go there. There's a lot about student rights there. In the past couple of years, we've been involved in a number of lawsuits, and also, we don't always take people to court. I mean, first we sit down and talk with them and say, look, this doesn't seem fair. This policy, why can't this person use the locker room that, of their gender choice? You know, why are you saying that this person has to dress in a separate room? This doesn't seem right because nobody else has to dress in a separate room. And sometimes they say, yeah, you know, you're right. That doesn't really seem fair. That person is being singled out. Okay, and, you know, we are able to work it through. But guess what? If we're not able to work it through, we've got lawyers, and we take them to court. And we've won a couple of lawsuits in the past couple of years against high schools in other areas of Illinois on just that issue. So we have been involved in some lawsuits recently in high school. And I actually had the privilege to meet some of those high school plaintiffs and hear them speak last year in Chicago, and they were very inspiring young leaders too, like yourselves. So in general, you do not lose your First Amendment rights when you go into school. However, schools do make the rules, and they can't punish you for missing class. As we go down from high school to middle school and elementary school, schools have more leeway about policies, about what students wear, because they can say that they're doing that to protect the students. When you get to high school, you guys are very close to legal adulthood, and soon you're gonna vote, so be sure you register and use that right. That's a really important right. So in high school, generally schools recognize that they're dealing with people who are adults and are near adults, and they don't, you know, they don't have the right to tell you that, well, that was in bad taste, or that was disruptive, or that was too controversial. They can't say that you can't wear something for those reasons. They can tell you you cannot hand out leaflets or speak or do something like that if you're disrupting an educational activity, if you're disrupting a class. They do have the right to make rules to ensure that, you know, education happens. But, for example, in some lawsuits in the past that high schools that have been brought on behalf of high school students, they have been found to have the right to wear, for example, a t-shirt against abortion, against the right to get an abortion. They have been found to have the right through a lawsuit to wear an anti-war armband when they were protesting our country's military policies. They've been found to have the right in court to wear a shirt supporting the LGBTQ community. So, a school, these students, in these cases, groups took these schools to court and they won. Students did have the right to wear these things. What a school can't do, a school, for example, could say, no hats in school. But they couldn't say, no gun control hats or no NRA hats. They can't make the rule based on the political content. So, hope that's clear. It has to be content neutral. They also can punish students who miss class, but they cannot punish students more harshly for taking part in a political protest than they would for missing class for any other reason. So, if you hear anything about that, anything like that happening, contact us, Champaign County ACLU. We're here to help. I did call Centennial's office earlier today because I did hear some rumors that those students were being punished harshly, and I wanted to check up, so I called and asked about the policy for unexcused absences, and from the best I could determine, I didn't meet with them in person, but from the best I could determine on the phone,
they actually were following the regular unexcused absence policy in terms of the way they record the unexcused absences and when they're filed and when the week that affects you, 1 week of social probation, and that did fall on the week of the senior prom. So it did not seem, as best I could determine, that they were punishing students more harshly than usual for this. But if anybody comes across any proof to the contrary, I'd really like to hear about it. And any time you feel your rights are being limited or infringed upon, you should contact the ACLU, and I hope you'll join the ACLU too. I don't know if people have any questions about this. Also, you have the right to post on social media. The school cannot control what you post on social media, so you have your free speech rights there. So don't let them tell you otherwise. It's good to know your rights, because when people kind of tell you these things, sometimes it's kind of vague, and if you don't know, it's really good to look these things up, and I recommend the ACLU Illinois website, and then you can say, you know, I read that. I have the right to post on social media, and, it doesn't matter. That the school can't punish me for what I say on social media. Some schools have tried to say this, that they have the right to control what students say beyond the school day in time and beyond the school doors. But this is kind of controversial. And these things get decided in court over years. Sometimes one side wins, sometimes the other side wins, but eventually the ruling goes high enough and it's settled. And that actually is the case with a lot of social media things that are still kind of being decided, because this is a new technological issue that hasn't come up in court cases in the past. I don't know, I have these handouts. I'm going to be one of the organizers.
Here.
Great, thanks. Also, I just wanted to say something briefly about the Second Amendment to leave you with this thought and argument, because your critics may say to you, but we can't have gun control because of the Second Amendment. Well, this is what the ACLU does. We protect the Constitution, all of it. And I don't know if you've heard the famous story that when neo-Nazis wanted to march in a Jewish neighborhood of Chicago, Skokie, Illinois, we, the ACLU, defended their right, because that is how democracy works in America. It's rough and tumble. Nobody gets protected. In some European countries, certain people get protected, certain groups get protected, and there are censorship of free speech. We don't have that in America. In America, everybody gets to speak, and the way that we counter that kind of hateful, offensive speech, which is protected under the First Amendment, no matter how hateful, no matter how vile, no matter how offensive, it is protected in our country. This is how our democracy is organized. The way to counter it is with more positive speech, more good speech. Because the problem is, when somebody starts deciding which speech is offensive, it will be the people in power who make that decision. And do you think they would have thought that Frederick Douglass's speech was appropriate or offensive? Martin Luther King's speeches, were they appropriate or offensive? Black Lives Matter, appropriate or offensive? So you have to be very careful when you go down that road. And I hope you'll think about it carefully. Part of being an American is to realize it isn't always comfortable to live in our democracy, but everybody has the same right. And when it isn't equally applied, when that isn't true in practice, we have to be out there as activists trying to make that happen. So I'm so glad you're joining us. Now about the Second Amendment. There is no reason you can't have gun control with the Second Amendment, as long as those gun control laws, which I hope you'll devise some good ones today, respect civil liberties and individual privacy rights, the rights that were guaranteed under the Constitution. As long as you don't take away anyone's rights, as long as you don't say, like, oh, Muslims can't have guns. No, you can't do that. That would be anti-constitutional. And you have to be particularly careful when you think about mental health. That's a little bit of a thorny issue and rights. But there's no reason it cannot be done. And the Second Amendment, even Judge Scalia, who was super, super conservative, who recently died, in 2008, he wrote the Supreme Court judgment for a case that's called Heller. And Heller is something you should learn about. It kind of changed gun ownership in our country from this militia idea to this individual idea. So it did make it official. But even Justice Scalia said, every right in America can be limited, and that includes gun ownership. No right is completely unlimited. And if you think about it, you know, the right to vote, you have to be 18, you have to register, you have to go to a certain place. There are all kinds of limitations placed on it. The right to drive a car, you have to wear a seatbelt, you have to have a license. So most rights in America, just because we have a lot of people and we've got to organize them, have these kind of limitations on them. And the Second Amendment, if someone says to you that, oh, we can't do this because of the Second Amendment, it's not right to use the Second Amendment as an argument against reasonable and fair and equitable gun control. So let me tell you one more thing. Activism takes a long time, and you gotta be patient. So I just wanna say thanks for all you're doing, and hang in there.
Announcements. For playing at the Art Theater through April 26th, there will be a showing of Beyond the Valley of Dolls with a satirical screenplay by Roger Ebert. The film follows three young female rockers going to Hollywood under the spell of a flamboyant producer. Transgressive and outrageous, this big studio version of a debaucherous midnight movie is said to be an addictively entertaining romp from Russ Myers. And screening on Monday, April 23rd at 7:30 p.m. is 1928's The Passion of Joan Arc. Long thought to have been lost to a fire, the original version was found in perfect condition in 1981 in a Norwegian mental institution. How about that? Previously available only in rare prints that necessitated live accompaniment, the film returns to screens in a new restoration partnered with Richard Einhorn's acclaimed score, Voices of Light. And again, you're listening to WEFT Champaign. This is more of the sit-in or teach-in of the march of the walkout and yesterday. And I believe this is Kim. This speaker's name is Kim Bryan, and so I believe she is the director of Rattle. Her name is Kim Bryan.
So again, my name is Kim. I am the director of Rattle the Stars, but I do have to kind of give, you know, props to my daughter for actually starting this organization. So sadly, this organization was started because I lost my son to suicide about 2 years ago. And my daughter was a junior in high school at the time, at Centennial. And just like you guys wanting to take action for something that was really important to you, it was important to her to start talking about mental illness and suicide in school. And so that's how we got started, and here we are. So I do want to give a little bit of trigger warning, because I am going to be talking about suicide. This is a difficult topic. We do know that about 1 in 12 youth have thoughts of suicide. About 1 in 25 adults have thoughts of suicide. And about half of Americans know someone who has died of suicide. So that means that it's very likely that there are people in this room that are experiencing this, who have been touched by this. And at Centennial, just a few weeks ago, we lost a student. So this is very personal. It can be very upsetting. If you do need to leave, again, we have people in the back that can kind of take you to a little safe space if you need some time. So, after school shootings, which, by the way, in case anyone has missed the news, I was watching the news this morning. There was another school shooting in Florida this morning. One student injured. That was the last that I heard. But typically, after school shootings, we often hear this commentary about mental illness, right? We need more funding for mental illness. We need interventions that involve mental illness. And, well, as advocates for people with mental illness, that's really great. We love to hear that. We want more funding. We want more attention to this issue. But there is a danger in talking about this when we're equating it with violence and mass shootings. Less than 5% of all violent acts that occur in this country can be attributed to people with mental illness. So that's actually really low. There's a very low risk of people with mental illness being violent. If we eliminated that risk that's associated with people with mental illness, about 96% of violent acts in this country would still occur. So that's a lot of attention that's being put on something that would have a very small result, right? Because we're not really addressing the core issue. Violence in itself is not a mental illness, as my shirt says. Violence is not a mental illness, but often violence is attributed to people with mental illness. The danger in this is that it stigmatizes people with mental illness. Now, people who commit violent acts can have mental illnesses, just like anybody can have a mental illness. Anyone in the general population, mental illness does not discriminate. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the violence is caused by the mental illness. Studies show us that violent acts are more related to situational circumstances, people's lived experiences, what they're going through, rather than the presence of mental illness. So like I said, equating violence with mental illness stigmatizes people. It makes other people fear them. Surveys show that about 50 to 60%, depending, of Americans believe that people with mental illness are likely to be violent, even though less than 5% of violent acts can be attributed to them. So there's a great disconnect there. But also importantly, when we equate violence with mental illness, we are reducing the likelihood that people with mental illness will seek help, right? Because they don't want to be labeled in that way. But when we're talking about this in relation to gun control, right, which is really what we're feared for, we also have to keep in mind that people with mental illness, they have rights to own guns too. And if there is not a danger, if they're not a danger to themselves, and they're not a danger to other people, should they be restricted from owning guns? Or should their rights be protected? So when we're talking about things like background checks, right? Background checks that focus on diagnosis of mental illness, people who are have inpatient treatment for mental illness, a lot of times we try to exclude those types of people, but they are not necessarily dangerous, right? These things, having a mental illness or being treated for mental illness in itself, these are not red flags for violence. This does not indicate that people will necessarily be violent. So, many people died by suicide with a gun, but by homicide. We often cite these statistics for the number of gun deaths that we experience and throughout, you know, these events and things that have been going on in our community. You guys have probably heard these statistics cited a lot. And often we just kind of brush past those suicide statistics. But those are really important too. When we think about this, two-thirds of firearm deaths are attributed to suicide, not homicide. More people die by suicide than homicide in every single age group in the United States. And these people matter too, right? These are people who are also victims of gun violence. But we don't usually talk about them. And why don't we? Couple reasons. First of all, there's generally a fear of talking about suicide in general, right? There's a big fear that talking about suicide is going to make people think about it or make people want to, act. And that's not true at all. In fact, most people who have suicidal thoughts, it's actually good to ask them, to talk to them. They're actually waiting for somebody to acknowledge their feelings, because it's a very scary thing to have to acknowledge yourself. But there's also kind of this perception that, well, people who die by suicide, well, they wanted to die, right? And people who are victims of homicide, they didn't have a choice. They didn't want to. So we really put this idea of choice associated with suicide, so we kind of skip by those deaths. But there are also a lot of factors. Suicide is a complex issue, just like homicide. And not everybody who is suicidal wants to die. Right? There's a lot of reasons that people go through this, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're making that choice that they want to die. So we need to address those myths to begin with. But again, thinking about guns and gun violence in relation to suicide. Half of all suicides are completed using firearms. For youth, 82% of those who use a firearm use a gun that was owned by a family member. Typically, it's their parents. And two-thirds of those guns that are used are stored unlocked and accessible. In the other cases, the youth most likely knew the lock or the combination or where to get the key, how to access them, or they knew where the guns were and were able to break and get them. So when we're thinking again about legislation and things that are related to this issue, making sure that we're also talking about not just gun safety in general, but gun safety within the home. For those people who do own guns, how can we prevent these types of deaths from happening? It's also important to remember, homes with guns, where guns are present, there's 10 times more likely to experience a youth suicide than in a home without a gun. Now, children of gun owners are not inherently like more suicidal, right? So what this is really getting at is it's the presence of the gun that increases that likelihood. And in suicide intervention work, the way we talk about this is the means, right? The means that a person uses. And means do matter. Guns are very lethal, right? In suicide attempts with guns, death occurs 80% of the time. They're extremely lethal, over 80%. Versus other means, typically things like drug overdoses, that's only lethal about 1.5% of the time. So reducing access to these means can reduce suicides, and there have been many, many studies that have shown this. Cities that have high rates of, for example, people who jump off bridges, If they install fences, protective fences, where people can't do that, the suicide rate drops. In Europe, a lot of countries, they, instead of putting pills in a big bottle, they put them in individual little bubble packs because it takes a lot longer to get enough pills out of the bubble packs than to just dump them out of a bottle. These simple things can reduce suicides. And the reason is because it gives time for the crisis that the person is experiencing. It gives time for that crisis to resolve, right? If we can reduce the access to the means, we can give people a chance, right, to come out of those thoughts and to give time for them to, you know, heal. Again, another myth about suicide, well, people will just find another way. And that's often what we hear when we talk, especially about guns in relation to suicide. Well, if we restrict access to guns, or we have gun safety or gun control, it doesn't really matter because they'll just find another way. And study after study shows that this is not true. Most of the time, especially for youth who are suicidal, it's a very impulsive thing when they're overwhelmed, when they're in crisis. And so, again, if we can reduce that access and give that time for that crisis to resolve, many people don't attempt again. They don't make another attempt. So when you guys are thinking and you're, you know, working and planning these legislative issues, right, that are important to you and your movement, it's important to remember that legislation that reduces access to guns and improve gun safety, it does lead not only to fewer suicides using guns, but fewer suicides overall, because we're reducing the access to that very quick lethal means. So, I'm sure some of you are sitting here going, well, this is really, you know, great and informative, but we're talking about school safety, right? We're not talking about suicide. This is not our issue. Suicide and school safety are very closely related. There are a lot of connections between suicidal acts and homicidal acts. They have very similar causes in many instances, and the signs are similar. It's also important to keep in mind, most school shooters, the majority of school shooters have suicidal thoughts at some point before they carry out the act of a school shooting. 53% of mass shootings in the United States end in the suicide of the shooter. We saw this recently in the shooting in Maryland that happened just before the March for Our Lives. That student took his own life. Adam Lanza at Sandy Hook, suicide after he had shot children at the school. And just recently, after the Parkland shooting, February 20th, there was a student in Ohio who shot himself in the bathroom at his school. And after his death, they came to find out that he had actually planned to go to school and shoot other students and then shoot himself. So these things are not separate. They're very much related. So again, 53% of shootings end with the suicide of the shooter. And another 34% end when the shooter is shot by police. And in many of those instances, it's intentional. It's termed suicide by cop, where people do things that they know will incite a police officer to shoot them. They intentionally try to get an officer to shoot them. So when we put that together, we can still see most of these people have suicidal thoughts at the time. They are intending, when they go and carry out this act, they don't necessarily intend to end this alive. They're intending to die during the commission of these shootings. So efforts that we make whether it's suicide intervention, whether it's prevention of school shootings, these things can't help each other. Now, there are some communities in the country that have already started programs called like red flag programs, where they are looking, they're teaching people the signs to look for to identify a student who may potentially be considering shooting at school, right? What they have found is unintentionally, those efforts have also caused reductions in the suicide rate. Because when they're identifying those students that are in crisis, they're identifying those students that are having trouble, and they are reducing access to the means, to the guns, suicides are also going down. But also we need to consider that suicide prevention efforts can also have an impact on trying to reduce school shootings and mass shootings. Because if we are identifying these people with suicidal thoughts at earlier stages, and we can intervene with them, we are also potentially preventing them from carrying out violence against other people. So, again, what I really want to stress is don't separate these issues, right? These are one and the same. They are very much related. So I know a lot of you are from various area schools, which I love. You guys are awesome for coming out here. But I want to let you know, out on the table by the door, I did put some flyers for our organization. We do suicide intervention presentations. If this is something you would like to include in your efforts at your school, you can pick up one of our flyers and get in contact with me. Also, I included, put out on the table, we have bracelets that we give out that have the Suicide Prevention Lifeline and the Crisis Text Line, which I really stress when I'm talking to students because you guys like to text, right? You don't like to call people. Crisis Text Line, 741-741, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. You can text that number if you are having difficulty, if you are struggling, and people will text you back and they will help you through. So very important to keep those numbers. I try to encourage students just to put them in your phone so that you have them for yourself, for somebody else, for a friend who you may be in a position to help. But if you'd like a bracelet, they're out on the table and I'll leave them there for the rest of the day. Thank you guys.
And again, that was Kim Bryan, director of Rattle the Stars. And just let you know, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And that will be it for the world we live in. I hope you have a nice Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. And I'm going to play out with Annie DeFranco, with her song To the Teeth. Have a nice day.
The sun is setting on the century, and we are armed to the teeth. We're all working together now, make our lives mercifully brief. And school kids keep trying to teach us what guns are all about. Confuse liberty with weaponry and watch your kids act it out. And every year Christmas, some boy gets the milk-fed suburban blues, reaches for the available arsenal, and saunters off to make the news. And the women in the middle are learning what poor women have always known, that the edge is closer than you think when you're your men bring the guns home. And look at where the prophets are. That's how you'll find the source.